Yo, yo, yo. Everyone should be able to hear me. Alrighty, guys. This one is going to be an interesting one. Similar to last week, actually, I decided to get some small scale people on. And to just, oh, by the way, you can use the guest thing for the basic info. I should have put that actually in the title. But, so Geronix is part of a called part of a corp called Goren Clade. You have been in it before, so that's where we know each other from. And he's also streaming. And maybe most people, I'm not sure by now, probably most people know you from the 5v5 scrims, which is a kind of AT, like old school alliance tournament based, like player organized tournament, right? And obviously still a small scale enthusiast, and that's the same for Water. And Water is actually it's all right that I just call you Water, right?
Yeah, most people call me Snow, but
Oh,
do
really?
whatever you.
All right, I'm gonna call you Snow. So Snow is actually
Snarl.
FC.
Snarl.
Snarl. All right. Snarl is actually the FC of that little corp. And well, actually, you are not involved with the 5v5 scrims, but you still know a lot of stuff about small scale stuff and your Geronix FC technically, right?
Yeah.
So,
Sorta, I suppose.
yeah,
But
just
go
some.
on, Jero.
No, you respond to that, Snow. You go for it. You let him know if you're an FC or not.
Not
Wouldn't
against
call
Nubs.
yourself.
Nah, I mean it's more or less a sort of all dudes type of thing where most people speak up. I usually call targets and stuff, decide on fleet comps and whatnot. But it's definitely not just me that does all this.
Well, you don't have to do everything to be called the FC, right?
No, I guess that's kind of true.
Technically, I had solo people on. I kind of call them FCs too, because like they've seen the smallest of fleets, which is solo, right? They're just FC in themselves. Because for a lot of people, that's how it starts, right? They take out a ship, they do some solo stuff. And then someone comes along with them. Like, where does it start being an FC, right? If you undock and you take charge of the thing, you're the FC, right? It's like very simple. It's not like there's some official course you have to do to get the badge of an FC, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So even groups that claim they don't even have an FC, there's always that one guy in charge, I think. Like there's always that one guy like saying, "Hey, let's go do this," right? So I'm guessing that's you in your corp.
Yeah, that's true. Like there are always a few people that sort of form the sort of core of your corp, like usually people that have been for a longer time member of your corp, just comfortable doing certain stuff. Like you always have a few guys that like to fly Logi, do it for a long time, are always a great help that way. People that scout, people that tackle, so on, so on. So yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's always the best about like especially smaller groups. Everyone has their little role already set, basically, right? It's way easier to be effective with that smaller group because people already you know exactly what dude one or dude two like what they bring to the fleet, right? You can easily say like, oh yeah, these guys are gonna have bonuses, these guys are gonna have this and this. You know, I mean, I do a lot of like small scale stuff for corp, and that's exactly, you know, how we roll too. Some people complain. I always have to be the bonus dude. I always have to be like this and this, but yeah. It's great
Yeah,
to have that core.
that sounds familiar.
I think one of the main differences for us though is that although not everybody does it, the vast majority of us should be able to do what everybody else does. Like, we do have the same guys flying logi, but any of us would be able to jump into a logi ship and fill that role. Or most of us should be able to fly tackle and know how to not die in tackle. It's not, you know, we won't abandon doing PvP for the evening if we haven't got the people that fly logi or the people that tackle, because we can all do it. So we're not really limited. We don't have that same limitation that other groups might have.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think probably that's part of the fun though, right? If you're in a small group, that's probably part of the fun that you can specialize in a certain direction, that your guys count on you being whatever role it is, the logi guy who always has his logi shit in order, and you really focus on that part. While like in a big group, let's say in Innit, for example, and like in big fleets, like it mixes up all the time. Yes, we have like certain anchors and all that stuff, but it's rare that like it's not, definitely not everyone can specialize in stuff, right? Some people are simply going to be the damage dealers and stuff. So I think that makes a lot of the fun out in smaller scale stuff, right? Or where, what do you think is like the number one reason why people enjoy small scale, right?
I'm not sure. Like that's a pretty tough question. I don't know. Yeah. I think people have different reasons to do it, probably. Like some like just fighting against the blob sort of thing, like always trying to fight outnumbered. Other just feel more comfortable dealing with a smaller amount of people, I guess. And I guess we could come up with more reasons apart from those. But I don't know. For me personally, I always liked sort of trying to fight outnumbered and sort of do fleet comps in sort of a small setting where sort of skill matters more than the number of people or the number of ships you would bring.
Yeah, I think you said it right there. I think like having more of an impact, like yourself, you know, that's probably the number one thing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, like when we bring a comp, I mean, very rarely, unless we do like a fully structured comp where we've got, I don't know, 15, 20, you know, when there's six or seven of us, there isn't a useless member on grid. Everyone's got a purpose. Everyone's got a use. Everyone helps screen. Everyone helps point, do damage, you know. The attraction, I think, is to be engaged and not to be bored, or just to feel like, you know, when you join these NullSec, you know, or the big, not necessarily NullSec, but the big fleets, you know, where it's like, you know, 100 people, you're just another number, and it's not, when you do small gang, it's not like that. You have a use. So I just got pinged, unless you're me, and I'm always useless apparently. So
yeah, I always think people want to be challenged to a degree, right? So for example, we had like a comp that you probably still remember, Geronix, which is Snatch.
The Snatch. Was... Oh, the Maguses and yeah. The couple of Cinnables and whatnot. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was good.
Which was
RIP.
Which was super challenging for people though, right? A lot of times, because they had to do so many things, and they had to do so many things also right. If you get caught off guard, you're not in a 200k EHP battleship that might just, you know, burn back to the gate. Like in most cases, you're just dead, right? So like, I personally was always I didn't always see the difficulty of a setup as a negative, you know? It can be a positive too, if it's a little bit more challenging. So, and I think that's like what you get in all small scale doctrines. You know what I mean? Like in small scale, you always have that. You can have a super strong setup, but most likely you will fight outnumbered then. Right, because hostiles see you in a strong setup. They're not going to give you the fucking mirror matchup, right? They give you the good old Murin treatment or something.
Well, that's not true in well, actually, I guess for us that's mostly not true. Yeah, I mean, you could either tackle something big. You know, you tackle a Rorqual somewhere, you keep it bubbled, and you just sort of wait with a few nanoships until they respond with, and then you can pretty much see what they're going to respond with, whether it be Munins or Ferroxes or whatever, and you basically have the rest of your people that are still in the wormhole or staging from somewhere else preparing in something different, so you can sort of anticipate their response. I mean, that could work. And also, showing ship types doesn't necessarily mean that you show what your setup is strong at, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like you can overprop stuff, you can just rely on big buffer, you can try rely on long range or whatnot, or a lot of control. So people might think they could win with, I don't know, with a certain ship type, but get surprised by it nevertheless.
That's pretty much what we're doing at the moment with Last Vexus, right? Jerolix knows what I'm talking about. they are overprop.
They were good.
Yeah, they are overprop. They have a large ancillary rip in the highs. Like, nobody does that really. So it catches everyone off guard, basically. They're not expecting it. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah. But
That sort of stuff is great. Like, it looks super engageable, just doing a bunch of vectors, and like you said, no one expects like overprop with remote reps and whatnot. So I mean, that's great.
You know, I think you guys are probably the perfect ones to ask. So I know to agree how it's gonna be, but so we had the Last Vexus. I did Last Vexus Navy issues before on a larger scale, which like at the time they were way stronger with 5 heavies and 5 sentries. But I plan on doing them again, but on a smaller scale. Like, how much engageability am I gonna lose, right? That's my question. Like, am I gonna still get the same kind, not the same good fights, right? They're gonna bring probably on average a little bit stronger setups to fight me. But like, should I stay with Tech 1 Vexus, you think? Or should I upgrade to VNIs, have a stronger setup, but then potentially hostiles are not as willing to engage, right? What do you guys think?
I think it's one of the things that counts most if you bring a lot of the same ship types. Like, if people see loads of Vexers or loads of VNIs, I don't think there's a huge difference in that. But let's say if you would bring a few Vexers, you would bring a different ship type that would sort of do the same thing and mix it up a little. So you look a little bit more sort of mixed ragtag type of stuff that people think, this is probably not really something consistent, so I can easily fight it. And then you can sort of surprise people because the ships are basically still doing the same thing, essentially.
That's quite interesting that you say that, because so my plan was, I call it Project Last, right? The last project, the large ancillary remote shield repair. So we start with Vexus, then we do VNIs. I already have Gilas that we're going to do right after.
Gilas are spooky, dude. Gilas are terrifying.
They're just so, there's a little bit hard to fit. So we have to go 10 MN instead of 100 MN with the Gilas, because it didn't quite work. I'm losing too much EHP there, right? So it was just too sexy on 10 MN. And they're going to be a little bit easier to anchor because I fucking suck at that. So we're going to go 10 MN with the Gilas, but it's still the same kind of concept. And then I've got also Ishtar's plan to do that. But then also, there's a lot of ships that fit into that category. So basically, the only thing you need is really like one utility high, right? For that wrapper. And then have enough power grid to kind of fit it and, you know, squeeze it in. And a lot of ships, you would be surprised how many ships that actually fits on. For example, we did Vagas before, which is just a fun kind of thing. Autocannons suck a little bit, but they're not as scary. If you show up with 10 Vagas, like, who wouldn't engage that really, right? A lot of people will. And they did well. They did really well. But exactly like you said, that's the plan right after the Ishtars is going to be like, take 2 Vexus, 2 VNIs, 2 Gilas, 2 Ishtars, and then maybe take 2 Vagas, maybe take 2 Ortresses on top of it, 2 ONIs, you know, mix it up that way, and then have the D-scan look complete shit. And then everyone's going to be like, oh, we engaged this. And then it's a strong setup, actually.
Yeah.
So exactly.
That's going to be the final stage, I guess. It should at least, in theory, have the best engageability.
Looking engageable is probably one of the... I wouldn't say it's a problem we have, but sometimes we... I don't know, we, for use of a better term, we blow our load too quickly. And, you know, we show far too much on grid and we don't get a fight. But yeah, you know, because you, I imagine you're doing this filamenting, right?
Oh, well, also, yeah, I think the filamenting isn't working for us all that well at the moment, but yeah.
But, I mean, not to throw shade at you if you're part of a null sec blob, you know.
It's not even that.
You're blue to what, like half of null sec?
That's not true. It's Fountain and Delph and Curious, right? It's like those two regions. It's not that crazy. There's one time zone where I can't filament. I'm not kidding, right? At 1600 till 1800, if I filament, I'm gonna end up in Delph or Fountain. 100%. Like, we tried it. We filamented twice in a row into Fountain from Fountain, and then the third time we ended up in Delph. So, at least we have jump bridges and we got to catch then. But you know.
Yeah. True.
I can do some wormhole traveling, probe a bit, find some different exits. That'll work.
Yeah, that's what we do usually.
You use the
Drifter wormholes?
Drifter wormholes. Yeah, we looked at them for a little while, but we stopped. I don't remember why we stopped.
Well, you probably stopped because it's a little bit of work to map them, right? So one person, if you have like just one dedicated guy, it will take you like 1.5 hours to do it, right?
Yeah, we've got a guy called Mia. He loves doing that. He loves
himself a good wormhole chain. But I tell you what, if you have one guy with a really good prober, like, I've got a virtue prober in the wormhole, and then you have two guys just with alpha tunes, you can just do it with Dremels, just them mapping it, you can do it within 45 minutes, right? 30 minutes, that's basically the probing, and then you need an extra 10 minutes, 15 minutes to map it. So I think for smaller groups, that would be very, very much beneficial, right? That you just tell your guys, hey, make a Dremel alpha tune, and then have one or two guys that have a dedicated prober. And then all you have to do is like have him probe and bookmark, and the other guys just burn around and map it. Very easy.
I think we had three of the drifter holes seeded pretty much with probers at some point, but I mean, activities of people sort of comes and goes. So people go AFK, people stop playing the game for a while. So in the end, that sort of stuff dies down a little bit in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would definitely work. If you have some active, committed people that want to do that, it's fantastic. It gives you like so many exits. It's pretty much a super highway, which is all the fun.
Yeah, that's what, like, those work way better for us than filamenting most of the time. Sometimes you get lucky with filaments, no doubt, right? But, you know, I like to mix it up and do both, right? So we filament out. If we get lucky, it's great. And if we don't, and we're completely, let's say we're in deep stain, right? You know how it is to filament into deep stain. There's nothing there, right? No. So, and then, but nobody rolls wormholes there either. So you can just jump into a wormhole, and then you can go wherever you want, right? So you like the combination is quite nice, I think. Yeah, you should totally do that.
Yeah, well, for us, it usually works different. Like, since we're staging from a wormhole, basically, if we don't like our exit, we'll just roll it and get another one. So for us, using filaments as sort of a means to get a fun roaming place doesn't really work. It works, but you just might as well just give the nullsec another roll, and you get the same deal, so to speak, and it's easier to get back, of course. But filaments are actually great to just get out of sticky situations. Like, you try to fight some people, you get blobbed, and people camp you in, and then it's like, yeah, well, what do we do now? Just filament out and just get rid of the Cade camp and see if we can get home from wherever we land.
Yeah, and I bet some people complain about that too, saying like, oh no, like they can just fucking filament out. But back, like before that, people could just log off. Is that what you want? People log off? Come on. Right? So I think that aggression timer thing, even though it's annoying the second you MGD, or you're not MGD, you filament out and you don't get anything, you want to filament right away and you have to wait 50 minutes, that's where it sucks. But in general, it's very well balanced, I believe. What's 15 minutes in the end, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of fair, I suppose. Give them at least some window of opportunity to get the combat probers out and make your life a little bit hard. I mean, that's But just like the gate cams that will last for several hours. Yeah, no, thank you. I'll just rather filament out.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it should actually by now, you should always carry a filament in every ship ever. Like one of the cheap ones, right? Like a couple of noise fivers. So you can always filament out, even in big fleets. You're about to get tackled. You know you're going to get tackled on the next gate. You don't want to be that one guy. You can just warp to a save and filament out. You know, it's like
yeah,
it has there's a lot of utility.
The other thing I think for us is, you know, that it applies to the same as the filaments and the drifter wormholes is that we generally will escalate. So we'll go out with like just nano trash and we'll get like we do it against Horde all the time. We'll go out with just random stuff and then feed like three bill like I did yesterday to them. And then we'll escalate with a proper comp. If we do that through filament or drifter wormhole, we don't really have that option. So, you know,
yeah,
as
that's
soon
true.
As we get blobbed or they escalate, we can't do anything, we have to leave. So that's kind of the advantage of just rolling the null set.
You know, with a drifter wormhole, I believe it is still possible if you get lucky, right? So if you have a drifter wormhole, two jumps out, it still works, right? We do that all the time, actually. Someone gets tackled on something and then they poke me and I just quick form. And that's a really strong tool that I think all other groups have underestimated for super long, right? We had like all these drifter wormholes mapped all the time. And someone pings us, we can get there in time. First of all, our form-up times are fucking great because like everyone knows, okay, we need to be fast. And you can actually get across the galaxy within 15 minutes. You know, it's fucking great. Right? I always wondered why like other bigger groups are not so after it.
That's so hot.
Oh, I mean, I guess it does require sort of a special way of going about them. Especially with smaller fleets, like you always get the chance that they show up on the exit and gang your ships and whatnot. So you need to have like a certain way of making sure they the drifters go away from your exit and whatnot to be able to get past. So maybe it's just, I don't know, people being uncertain about it and haven't really figured out how the mechanics work around.
Yeah, for those who wonder how it works, I actually did map a wormhole the other day. It's not too long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. I tried to break a record from someone to solo map it. It's fucking, oof, it's hard, right? But if you know how the drifters work, you're pretty safe, right? Most fast warping ships, you can just warp off anyway. The only thing is, like, so you can map it without a cloak, so you can do it with an alpha tool, right? Which we use like Dremels, which most people are probably too scared to do because they think, oh, you're going to die anyway. No, Dremels are fast enough, so you can always get back to the warmer, just spam it, just don't MWD, right? Or other people might use cloaks and then die because that's the weird thing about drifters is if you reapproach and you use your cloak, a player would then stop locking you, right? But the drifter battleships, they don't stop locking you. They just, if you're still cloaked by the time they would finish it, then they wouldn't lock you. But if you decloak by that time again, they would insta-lock you and then pop you. And that's what happens a lot of times, I think, to mappers and stuff like this, that they think cloak is more safe there, which is not the case, right? So they die there and then it gets annoying because then you don't have a ship. Then you have to drift 85 km. Then you have to, like, you know what I mean? And then they think, oh, fuck this. And but if you know how it works, it's very quickly done. So I hope some smaller groups maybe, you know, maybe like you guys start using this a little bit more, right? There's probably going to be good fights to be had too. So
yeah, that's true. But it, as you said, like it does take quite a bit of time to probe everything out. And as we're kind of a small group that brings, you know, a decent amount of workload on very few people.
Yep.
So I guess, I mean, maybe we'll do it again. I'm not sure if people are motivated to do it. Of course, go for it. It'd be good. But I guess most people are sort of thinking, well, you know, we'll just spend our time rolling some nullsecs, maybe do some probing through the C5 or something. Finding some random stuffs is usually just an easier way of going about it.
Yeah, so like just to let people know, like if anyone has questions about that, I'm more than willing to explain everything and stuff. So if anyone of any small group is looking at this, I just come with me in Discord and I'll explain things for you. But yeah, I think I wouldn't know what to, like, I don't even know what to do without those at this point. Like, I'm using them so much, and even though, like, for roams, for even for the big fleets, that's why we're flying Kikis and Stukas and shit like this all the time. They fit through. So
I think Harvey's got the best suggestion in chat. You say you don't know what to do if you didn't have them. I think that's a great suggestion.
Oh, you could not blue everything. Well, wait, isn't he in PL?
No, Harvey's in.
I used to be PL.
They're living in a C2 no or C3 no now. Nah. Same as this. They're in Strix. Used to be in higher than Everest and Culture.
Yeah, but they joined PL.
They do the same thing. Oh yeah, at some point a while ago.
There's more blue sub band fan than was, but I personally didn't blue anyone, and everyone knows I'm not a big fan of it. So. But at the same time, if you're a Nullsec group, the sad reality is, like, if you leave the coalition business, you make yourself a target. You've seen it with GTG. They weren't part of any coalition, and then NC moves in and, you know, pokes them. And then, of course, like, we go up and help them, and then it's like, oh, look, they're Imperium pets. That's what, like, the argument is then. You see it with all kinds of stuff. You see it in, you know, with all groups, really. Right? It always goes in that direction. You see it now with Snuff, right? In this case, like, Snuff pokes our R64s, and then it develops always into this mega blob shit, right? The second you hold something of value, be it soft or, I mean, soft is not really that valuable, but you know what I mean, right? If you go out of coalitions, you make yourself a big target. That's the problem, right? An easy target, let's say it that way.
Yeah, it's just like, we have been seeing this a lot more often over the years, where just everyone dog piles onto a single entity or a single sort of a conflict or whatever. I mean, everyone is just so starving for content, it seems. It's a little bit sad to see that just not even the bigger groups do anything remotely looking like risking their stuff towards, you know, either trying to crush another alliance or coalition or whatever. It's been super stagnant over the years, and that's kind of sad. Like it would have been more fun if people would go for conflicts much more often, even just smaller or whatever. It would help the game a lot, actually.
Yeah, it would. But at the same time, it's the good old discussion about, like, is it the players or is it the game mechanics that make it that way? I mean, it's a mix of both, but, like, where exactly, you know, who's responsible for this, you know? I don't know the answer to this.
I don't know. I honestly think it's more player thing than mechanics. Like, if I look at our group, like, where do we play for? In the end, we just play to get good fights, try some new fun ships, have a decent time. And sure, I mean, most of the time we blow other people up. Often we get blown up ourselves, but it's fine. You win some, you lose some. At the end of the day, you had a good spending of your evening, sort of.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing, the null blob perspective is never represented in that argument, really, right? Which is, like, for example, let's take Init for an example. I think a lot of people out there are probably pointing their fingers at us, like, why don't you guys, like, leave the Imperium, which has always been, like, super annoying. So why don't we, right? I think one of the reasons is we make ourselves a massive target, but at the same time, it's not even the risk, not willing to risk it. But at the same time, for what? You know, what do we gain from doing it? That's the big question. Like, are we gonna have more opportunity? Do we get like 24/7 good fights? Like, all that doesn't really change all that much for us. Besides, you know, beside the the fact that we can't really build an empire, which is, you know, what every null block to a degree has to do to survive in this game, right? So it's like, what are you gonna do, right? Like, are we gonna, you know, what's the plan there? You know, that's the thing. We can't all be small scalers.
No, sure, but once you build your own gigantic sandcastle, so to speak, right? I mean, what do you want to do? Kick over the sandcastle of the other dude, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I'm not. I personally don't see myself as like one of those empire builders or whatever. I'm just saying that's the meta, where the meta went with the whole rock thing with citadels. I think citadels are like a big discussion point at the moment, anyway. It just promoted that behavior so much that everyone, it became this arms race, but nobody really knows for what we're actually, you know, getting all those supers and titans in the end, right? So yeah, I don't know. I don't know these answers, the answers to these questions. It is a little bit sad, right? But you guys are living the good life. You guys are just, you know, doing whatever you like. Like, with a small group, I think that's probably the best you can do at the moment.
We play the game to play the game. Like, you know, Snow doesn't log on every day and say, you know, what solve we're going to conquer today. It's just playing the game. I suppose, you know, the group of people across the game that we're talking about are playing the game their way. The game being played that way involves thousands of players, and from our perspective, it just seems boring as fuck. Like, in a blunt term, like, I don't get the attraction at all. And, you know, just excuse the term, but being an F1 monkey is, you know, is effectively what people are doing. It's just not appealing gameplay at all, and I don't see how people enjoy it. And Harvey said something in chat there. And, you know, they ask the question, is it players or is it the mechanics? Well, it's both. You know, players don't want to do the bullshit solve wanding, blah, 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 which is probably why the big null set blobs don't want to go and contest another one. If that mechanic was somehow changed, that could engage small gang PvPers to get involved in that, or medium scale, or, you know, that was looked at in a different way, it might bring the groups of players together. I doubt it, but, like, it's just dull. Everyone hates it. This is why the null set blobs aren't doing anything to go and conquer another null set blob, because it's boring as fuck.
And it's also, so that was probably the number one, like, that was the reason why you guys left in it, like, what was it, 2018-19?
Yeah, we went to a wormhole, didn't we? And then we dropped out of it. I don't know why we dropped out of it, but I stopped playing around that time because we were doing Snatch and we were doing Cavalry Ravens, and it was just blob warfare. So I stopped playing for a while, but then Mind Games reformed Suddenly Spaceships, and we went back to the wormhole, or went to a wormhole, and then I started playing again, yeah.
Yeah, and then what happened to Suddenly Spaceships? Aren't they still around?
No, Suddenly Spaceships, what did they do? So they had the wormhole, couple of key people that were driving the fleets and doing the gangs left, and then they just kind of meh with their activity, and then I think they went to Volta for a time, and then their activity kind of died there, so I think they made the decision to leave, and now they're back in low sec somewhere, back under the flag of Suddenly Spaceships.
Yeah, that might be one of the weaknesses or the struggles of smaller groups, right? That if, like, that one key personality, or maybe two, they go inactive, the entire group kind of drifts into inactivity too, right?
Yeah.
You even see it with bigger groups. Like, look at Black Legion, for example. Like, that's a great example. Once ELO goes AFK, then, yeah, sure, everything implodes.
Yeah, ISV with Kendo. Right? There's a difference in groups there, I think, when it comes to bigger groups. Like, I don't want to... It's not, I don't mean it in a negative way, but some groups are more of a cult, you know what I mean? Like a personality kind of oriented group, which is then, you know, the Black Legions and SVs and stuff like this, they very much focus on that one guy who's their, like, glorious supreme leader. And, you know, other groups are a little bit more flexible that way, I guess. They can, you know, they can live without that one guy. They have like several people. But yeah, I mean, every group has it to a degree, I guess. No. But
yeah, I think like keeping your corp or alliance running for like the long term, like for years and years, that's actually one of the hardest thing to do in this game.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why big groups don't wanna, you know, just deploy somewhere for the heck of it. It's a massive risk, right? They don't wanna leave the Imperium, for example, and then suddenly stage in I don't know, some hostile area. You're gonna get blocked to shit. It's gonna be fucking tough. And for what? There's nothing to gain, everything to lose, right? In its case, I'm just bringing in it up every now and then, because, you know, obviously as the group I know the best. There's a long history there, right? There's like it's a social group, really, right? So it's like you risk all that for what? At the moment, there's not much gain. It's like you don't gain all that much from any of those moves. So I think that's one of the big reasons why it's not happening, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but apart from the risk of just simply getting crushed or whatever, I think the bigger risk lies in like your people going AFK, sort of like your core people where you used to rely on. Like, I guess for bigger alliances, that means the people that do the logistic stuff, like the jump freighter runs, the maintaining the infrastructure, organizing fleets, taking people out for content, FCs, whatnot. Like, once those people start to go AFK for either game-related reasons or real-life-related reasons, those are always very hard to replace. I'm sure they might come back after a while. Some take shorter than the other. But it's always sort of tricky to recruit the right people to sort of fill up those positions, or people wanting to do it even.
Yeah. Yeah, we have got a bunch of those key people that even people in Alliance don't even know that much. They don't know how much work goes into that, right? Like, just jump bridge fueling and the whole Citadel thing now for big groups, like, that's a headache, right? Your Citadels, are they in abandoned mode? Like, you know, someone has to check all that, you know? It's all coming down to that core group, right, that we talked about earlier. No. Astrophobically asked, why do you think grudges have fallen out of favor with groups in EVE? Used to be you have a grudge against a group and you'd go to the ends of the game to fuck with them. What do you guys think? I have a theory, but I want to hear your theory, if you have one.
I thought about it a bit, because I think many people ask that question where they would say, you know, you used to have the pure hate-related stuff where one alliance would just wanted to kill the other just out of pure hate, and you don't really see that anymore, like, at all. It sort of became a sort of more circle of friends type of thing. I mean, maybe it's because the game sort of became a little bit more niche and the community is smaller than it used to be, I think, than in those days, but or maybe just general mentality changed. I'm not sure.
What do you think, Geronix? You got a theory?
Not really. I think it just became a lot easier for people to not fight unless there was a reason to do it, rather than just go in there for the fight. It comes back to the point I said before. You know, people aren't going to fight in the game unless they have to. You know, for the most part, there needs to be a reason behind it. There needs to be a motivation to form 100, 200, 300 dudes. If it's just there to get a good fight, then does it? Is there going to be a reason for them to undock? It's the same. Same logic applies to small gangers rocking up in your region with, you know, it's like why we occasionally shove wand or we tackle a ratter and hold them, or we have to tackle a rook. People don't just fight to fight now. There has to be a motivation to do it. And if there isn't a motivation to do that, regardless of the grudge, I just don't think there's no inclination to do so.
I mean, so the argument would be that the grudge is the reason why they would undock and do stuff, right?
But that's not enough, is it?
So, obviously. Well, I think, like, and I talked about that before, I think with PGL it came up. I think Discord plays a big role here, because it has never been so easy to connect to any other FC and you see a lot of interaction in between FCs, which kills a lot of the grudges. There's still grudges, like we've seen just recently. There's a little bit of a grudge. I mean, it wasn't for long, but it was like Vili versus Sword Dragon, or you would have, you know, something like this. It would go on still, but it's super rare now. And I think because people used to just be able to say, oh, okay, this guy is a massive dick, and you know, can tell whatever he wants about this other person, right, or this other player, and his fleet members or guys in alliance, they just have to believe it, right? Because they don't know better. They don't know if that dude is actually a dickhead, or if he maybe that dude is all right, and you know. But over time, I think people have been in different groups and all that stuff, so everyone's connected to a degree, and you know, at the end of the day, everyone knows like, they're not that bad and stuff like this, right? It's like hard to build a grudge on that kind of stuff. But it was easy to have a grudge or like to hate on a group that you never had contact with, and the only things you ever heard about them were negative, right? That was the reality way back when, right? The only things you would hear about, like, let's say we were at war against like AAA, would only be negative things, because we never talked to them. We don't read their propaganda, right? So there you go. It was way easier, I think, to get all grudgy about things.
It's kind of sad that it's gone, to be honest. Like, as an outsider, it was pretty hilarious to watch most of the
things. Got nasty too, though, right?
Yeah, sure.
And then Eve is real. You saw it with like GigX and all that shit, you know. That's a grudge on another level, you know what I mean? It's like, grudges are great for the game, but at the same time it can go out of hand, right? No pun intended.
I think it's just easier for us, like, to try and divert us back towards something that's loosely small gang related. That, you know, I mean, I don't even think we've got anybody set blue anywhere, and I don't think we really give a shit about anybody's opinion. We'll just shoot anybody. And I think, you know, if more people in the game adopted that attitude, I think the game would be a lot more fun for the vast majority of people.
Yeah, but why? So what do you think? What's stopping people from doing small scale? Like, why isn't everyone just saying, ah, fuck this, I'm leaving, like, grab my corp and we join, like, we fucking move into a C2? Like, why don't...
No, because it's the, you know, look, there are, let's not beat around the bush, there are a lot of advantages to living in, you know, a block alliance or anything of that. You get a jump bridge network, you get discount on caps, I think. You get SRP, like, we don't do SRP, like, Jesus Christ, you know, there are a lot of advantages to being in one of those groups, but it's about what you want out of the game, you know.
I mean, in the end,
that's why, I think that's the main reason why. And there is a bit of a, I wouldn't say stigma, but there's a perception of small gang and what we do, that you've got to be, you know, 325 bajillion SP, and you've got to have 6 AT ships and 17 jump clones with loads of implants. And it's not the case. It's just a stigma about it. Oh, we do a bit of SRP actually, before I get called out for feeding saber after saber. But yeah, you know, it's not quite the same as what you get in an OSEC blob. You know, we don't have that same infrastructure.
Hey, you know? We used to, like, so my corp within it, we never had any moons or any of that stuff, and we have 0% tax because nobody's redding anyway, so it doesn't make money no matter what. Actually, we do have 10% now, but it doesn't make any risk. But like, we used to run 100% reimbursement on all fleets, which was just financed by loot, like by only loot, which we were pretty proud of for a long time. Which nowadays doesn't work anymore, because we don't catch all that many juicy Care Bears with Corp Ops anymore. But we used to run it like this, so, you know, SRP to a degree is still working, even for smaller groups, I would say. So that might not even be the big factor for people, I think.
No, I mean, for us, it's been working out quite well, I think. like basically we have a simple policy where you do a fleet, you put your faction loot into a corp hangar, and that stuff we sort of use to buy sabers, stilettos, like support ships for certain comps and whatnot. Like all the tackle stuff gets reimbursed anyway. Even most of the support ships get a decent amount of percentage reimbursed, sort of, maybe not fully, but at least more than half or a little bit more even. So I guess that keeps it fairly easy for most members on their wallets if they don't feed too much, right, Jero?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when we don't, well, yeah, I say we don't do SRP, I'm getting hazed in DMs and corp chat left, right, and center. We did. There is like, what do we? I mean, you probably know better than, like you just said, Snow. You know, we have corp sabers and stilettos, and they're free. You know, we feed them left, right, and center, and that's pretty much what the loot pays for, as well as some other things. But I don't fly the support ship, so I have no idea what what happens if you lose one of them. Other than if I lose a corp ship, I have to pay an obnoxious amount to replace it.
That's very similar to us. Then we're constantly broke, like as a corp, right? We're constantly broke, but like all the ISK we spend is like on Dictus, or for example, my scouts, like I lose like every fleet I lose a scout or two, right? So all scouts and all Dictus are free and they're just laying around so people can pick them up. And then sometimes we invest, if we have too much, we invest into like setups, like the last VNIs or like Gilas and stuff like this. But yeah, it can, I mean, would you say maybe that being broke as a corp is more fun than having a massive wallet? It probably is, right?
Snow, what do you think?
Well, I mean, with us, it sort of depends on how active our main theory crafter is. Like, if he's very, very active, we're going to be broke as fuck. If he's not that active, we might do okay.
Are you burning all the corp isk?
Not just buying new comps or trying something new or upgrading stuff or whatever. I mean, it's all good spend. I mean, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it usually is quite is consuming. So
yeah, that's one of the constant struggles I have, like in init, for example. Like I was like, I'm not calling the shots there, obviously, when it comes to ISK, especially because they know my corp is broke, so like don't let Pano get close to the Lion's wallet, right? But like I always want to invest into activity, right? That's the policy we run in corp, is like as long as the ISK we have goes into the right things, like any activity really, like we're doing the right thing, right? And I think that's very like very much like all small groups should handle it, I guess, right?
Yeah, it seems a very fair way of doing things. And it works out for most, I suppose. So what?
Yeah, you don't. That's another thing, maybe, that people need to realize. Maybe that's what people are a little bit scared of, leaving bigger groups to do their own little thing. Like, ISK isn't all that important at the end of the day, right? ISK is just like, you know.
I mean, in the end, it's a pretty broad game, so to speak. Like, there's loads of shit you can do if you're like an Excel fetish, then sure, you know, eat your heart out with market PvP or whatever. Like, there are plenty of things you can do. And I think the small gang community in particular just represents, in the end, a very, very small part, niche part of the game, sort of. So it depends what you want to do, really. Like, what's your motivation to play? Like, if you want to do, I don't know, different type of stuff, then I'm sure you'll have different motivations of joining alliances or corps or doing stuff on your own or what.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like sometimes people just play for that number, on like that ISK number to go up. You know what I mean? And that's the sad part, because they can never be happy in the game then. You know, if that's your motivation for the number to go up, yeah, well, you'll forever do that.
Yeah, I guess, but everyone gets at a point where ISK doesn't matter anymore, right? Or at least if you're just only crabbing just for the crabbing, then at some point you're going to have such a god-awful amount of ISK, like you'll never spend it on, well, much, I suppose. Like, well, it's,
you can get rid of ISK fairly quickly, I mean.
Yeah, exactly, but I mean, what are you going to spend it on? if not using it. I mean, sure, having just numbers tick up, great, fine. I mean, you'll have a great number of ISK, which you don't use for anything. I mean, that's that. I mean, in the end, you should say, okay, now I'm going to do certain stuff or spend it on something or do something with it anyway.
Yep. No, that's right. Oh, by the way, that's one of the things I actually wondered about with the 5v5 scrims is... So is that even on Tranquility or is that a different server?
No, it's being done on Sissy at the minute, but but it will be moving soon.
To Tranquility?
No, to...
Oh, because of the ISK thing, right? So I wonder,
It's not just the ISK, but it's the nature of it. So, like, how much have you actually watched or have you got any clue about it at all?
I do have, I mean... So, if I would have to explain it to someone, I would say, okay, do you remember the AT? And if they say yes, okay, we've got a basis, right? So, that's kind of the concept is you have the ships with points, and then it's instead of 8 or 10, or like I think they had a 12-man version of the AT before, you have 5, which I feel like is probably the better balance, to be quite honest. So you have a 5v5, and it's like the ships have points, and you can spend so many points, right? So and then you have like some exceptions. So I'm not sure about the exceptions. I think you cannot bring any logis.
No, you can't.
So you can bring a logistics ship.
No, it's five ships. You can bring logi, but there's fitting restrictions around the logi. You can bring 5 logi ships if you want, but I think with only one ship can have remote repairs. So, you know, you can bring an Arios, a Simi, and a Guardian. Well, you can't because they're T2 and they're not in the meta at all. And I can't believe I just said that, but never mind. So it's 5v5. The reason we don't do it on TQ is because it's done in a draft style format. So if you've played League of Legends or Dota, you find out what ships you're going to be flying in the 10 minutes before or the 20 minutes before the match. So doing that on Tranquility can be a bit of a nightmare because there's a maximum of 10 minutes during the pick and ban phase. 5 minutes each, and then you've got 15 minutes to decide who's flying what and how you're going to fit the ships. And trying to coordinate that on Tranquility and getting people to invest the ISK, you know, buying a Balgorn that they're going to kill in like 3 minutes, it's just going to die, is a lot. So it's been done on Sissy, but we are in the process of getting Thunderdome to a place where we can use it. So, that's, you know, there's all kinds of reasons for the 5v5 in the fact that, you know, it's done on Sissy because it is more accessible. You know, AT kind of had that stigma of you needed big money to get into it and invest in ships and fits and implants and the theory crafting time and all that.
Which was part of the fun though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Part of the story.
I mean, get Snoll's opinion on how fun the theory craft and the setup time was it when he just stepped away to get a drink, I think, but he's back. Snoll.
Yes.
Part of the fun of the AT, like, I don't know how much you want to speak about it, but how much fun did you have prepping for the AT in terms of everything that happens outside of the match? How much fun was that?
Certain parts are just pure AT. Other parts are a lot of fun to do. Like the practices itself, I mean, sure, that's fun. You'll learn a lot of things. You'll learn which setup works. You'll learn to execute better, et cetera, et cetera. So that's cool. But like, especially in the more earlier years, doing logistics for an AT team, it's just not something you'll enjoy ever. Like it takes a crap load of time to do it properly, to make sure that people can't sort of backtrace your stuff that you've been buying or stuff you have been set up to develop your comps and that sort of stuff. So that's just hours of work, which in the end result in a 2-hour practice session or something, which is just a lot of commitment for, you know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that always, I don't want to say maybe... Like scared me, but that's why I never did it. I think the simple investment of time while also FCing for the Alliance and doing like co-op stuff and all that stuff, on top of that, investing enough time to have a solid chance of actually getting some wins, not even win the thing, right? But getting a couple of wins, get quite far and stuff like this. That investment was just too much always a thought, you know. And I think, yeah, maybe if you have like a 5v5 thing, that's very like casual. And you like, so is that actually, do you have like matches on set days, like every week, or do you guys or maybe several times a week or once a month, like what's the schedule anyway?
So at the minute we're running a league, which is quite an involved process. So we've got 14 teams, broken into two different divisions. Matches are played from Sunday to Saturday, and every Saturday, and we've got one tomorrow, we do a scheduled broadcast from 1800 till whenever. So we've got three matches tomorrow, and you're welcome to come along because we've got a bit of time to fill at some point because of scheduling issues.
What time is that?
20:30 eve time.
That'll be around at that time.
Yeah. So yeah, we've got three matches tomorrow. So the teams basically arrange their matches for themselves throughout the week. There's six matches a week, and every week a different team from each division will get a week off, so they don't have to play that week. We were running opens, but we've kind of, one of the challenges we've got actually is that we wanted to make this accessible for people, right? So like I said, AT's got a bit of a stigma. It's a bit inaccessible. You need quite a few players. And as Snow said, there's a lot of practice that goes into it. But we wanted to make it so it's a bit more open. So, you know, five players, log on to Sissy, you just turn up, you do a draft, you play. But we noticed since we started the league, the number of people that attend the opens has kind of dipped because a lot of these teams are super try-harding it and being really OPSEC, like described. So we don't see them at opens as much. But yeah, we do matches. They run throughout all the week. Generally, I'll just brawl if there's any that are a reasonable time zone, and you know, and they're not in the wee hours of the morning, I'll broadcast them. But we do a broadcast every Saturday with at least three matches.
So those matches take place also, and sometimes they're not broadcasted?
Correct, yeah. But they'll get recorded. The referee will record them, and that there'll be a VOD, and the how it looks may differ slightly from what we see on a live broadcast, but it's still, you still see the draft, you still see the match.
All right. Well, I didn't know. And if you, like, let's say now you have 14 teams in that league, if that grows to a level, let's say you have 100 teams, right, at some point, that would be the dream, right?
I'll and then panic.
Enough people to handle it, right? That's another thing.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think the format we're looking at, like the league, right, to speak frankly, has got some massive advantages and some other disadvantages. Like, so one of the main advantages is it's given us times to sort out the tool. So we've got a website with the picks and ban tool and the tool that does all the teams, and the website's great. And having the league has given us the time to do that. It's also given us time to work out the rule sets and get the team managing and get the referee scheduling and the refereeing tool done. The problem is in the league, there's 150 players, you know, and we've got players from, I don't know, Test, PL, you know, a couple of moderately big names in there who are busy, and sometimes they can't commit or their team can't commit. I mean, just before we started the play-ins, a team had to drop out because Inner Hell decided to start evicting them. So we had to spread out the league. And, you know, once you factor in, you know, you take a step back and look at the real world and what's going on. Everybody's keen at the minute because of COVID and everyone's got time. But in a couple of weeks, you know, or in a few months when the world goes back to normal, if it does, the landscape might be a bit differently. So one match a week was enough to spread it out so that people didn't have to have a massive time investment. The problem is some people are getting a bit bored of waiting, or, you know, they're just losing interest. So I think in the future, we're going to look at doing more event-based weekend things, you know, like a 1 month tournament or a 2 weekend tournament, something like that, something that doesn't run as long.
Or maybe like so I used to play CS back in the day, like competitively, right? So, and the leagues there were organized in a way you would, you know, you would challenge other teams. So everyone could pick for themselves how active they want to be. Mm-hmm. Do you guys think about a system like that maybe?
Yeah, the problem is that it's not a problem. Yeah, we want to do something like that. We'd like to have like a solo queue function and do all that kind of stuff. The problem you've got is how do you, there's loads of different factors that how do you enforce it? How do you, you know, you need CCP engagement that currently, you know, there's a couple of holes with running it on Sissy because we can't enforce certain rules. It's all done on goodwill. Although we do enforce them, and there have been times when people have, we'll just say, broken the rules. So, yeah, there's a lot of grand ideas we'd like to do, but it's more, can we do it in a way that is autonomous and be controlled without us being there, you know?
Yeah.
And the answer at the minute is no. So, but we're working with CCP. You know, CCP have been doing really good with us, you know, contrary to popular belief, and they are helping us. I talk to CCP Aurora every day about Thunderdome and stuff, and I'm pretty sure I've just had an email with a lot of Thunderdome accounts to hand out to the people in the league. So,
oh, yeah, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Yeah, but like, so then, so CCP is trying their best, and you know what? I think that's what happened to the AT, to the AT to a degree, is that key, like that core member of CCP who was doing the AT fell away, basically, right? So he like left CCP or something.
Yeah, I think. And then, I think Logibro looked after the. I think there's a lot more. I think there's a lot more to the. I don't want to go down this road because it's going to make your chat explode. I think, but I think the AT from a player perspective has looked at what it did for the players, and ultimately, at the end of the day, you've got to remember CCP is a business, and I think CCP set the bar too high for themselves with the AT, you know, in terms of production and everything that went behind it, because there was a lot of volunteered hours and whatnot. So I think, although I'm sad to say it, I don't think we'll ever see it come back in quite the same way. But I know that they're working with, like, us doing the 5v5s. I know they're working with a couple of other groups that are doing competitive stuff and, like, organized, structured player versus player stuff, which is good, which is a step in the right direction. It just, we need the tools, and there needs to be some autonomy in there that means, you know, a player doesn't have to have that direct line of communication with them to get something done. You know, take CS, for example, or take any competitive game, you know, even League, you can kind of host your own mini tournament in a way. You know, Eve needs something like that to engage that group of players.
Yeah, maybe one day it's just going to be like 5v5 Abyssal Arenas and stuff like this, right?
Yeah, why not? Do, you know, imagine being able to organize your own custom match where you do five badges versus five, I don't know, other random hauler that I can't, you know, just that kind of thing. Like, because you can do that at the minute, but like, okay, we'll do it on TQ, but you can be trolled. We'll do it on Sissy. It's kind of meh because it's on Sissy and it's not that accessible. That's the other problem as well. Like, we made this accessible by putting it on Sissy, but unless you know how to get on Sissy, it adds another blocker in place. So
yeah, it's a minimal one, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but any blocker is a blocker, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want it as easy and accessible as possible, and you know, step by step, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping we'll get there, because even Hilmar said it on the CCP stream. He wants, I mean, I think I can't quote him directly, but he said he wants Eve, you know, Eve Sports. He wants Eve to have its own esports somehow. You know, I don't know what that looks like, but it'd be cool.
Yeah, I think that's what they said, right? They want to, instead of doing the AT again, they want to focus on enabling players to do stuff like this, and which is, you know, which I think you guys do an important job there, because if they didn't have a group of people like you guys doing that right now, they wouldn't know where to start, honestly, right? I think they would be like, okay, where do we start? Like, how do we enable people to do this? But you guys started, even though you didn't have anyone really helping you guys all that much, right? You started on your own, basically.
I mean, you gave us the questions beforehand, and you know, one of the questions was, how did this come about? And yeah, like, even I don't know the proper origin story of it, because just one night Casper said to me, do you want to hop on Sissy and just help us out with something? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'm not doing anything else. And Casper and Amelia, Wild Things, Vordak, and some other people had been discussing a 5v5 format with picks and bans, and they had someone had done a little spreadsheet for them. And I played, and I was like, I looked at this spreadsheet, and that, because I'm an Excel nerd, I won't lie. And I thought, I can do some magic with this. And then, you know, 2 and a bit months later, we've now got a full running league with a website and a tool and CCP support. So, pretty good.
I think I've seen the early ones with the spreadsheet. I think I have seen that. And I was like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
Have you actually seen the website? Have you seen the website yet? And the picks and ban tool and all that?
Yeah, I think I think I've seen that. Well, actually, if you want to send me a screenshot, I can just put it on screen. And then people on stream can see it too.
Wait, let me show you. Let me get one of the picks and bans. Hang on. I think... tell me if you can see this. You might have to log in. Where are you?
One sec. This might just block my... Nope, it does block the camera, luckily.
So comment there on Twitch about the drafting phase being too long. The drafting phase is never too long. It's the theory craft stage we have a problem with, and don't worry, we are looking at ways to make that a bit less dull for people soon, TM.
That's one of the things that I think is probably a little bit challenging is like, how long do you have to fit them up? Like, you pick a ship, and then I'm supposed to be the Ishtar pilot, right? Like, how long do I have to pick the right fit?
Well, it depends. You've got you know, a minimum of 15 minutes to make the fit and then get to your on dock, basically. The thing is, if you're a well-prepared team, you're going to have flex options. You're going to have flex picks. You know, you're going to have a pre-made Ishtar fit that's shield or armor that you've got a couple of utility mids or lows, depending on what you want to do with it. You know, it's prepared teams and prepared people shouldn't be really making fits straight off the bat. It shouldn't be that way. Not really.
Yeah, I just put the thing how it looks on stream. Yeah.
And that's the picks and bans tool.
Yeah.
So before a league match or any match, they get given a link to that, and then referee will start the timer. And then each team gets 5 minutes each. It alternates like a chess clock. And we did add in a function recently, which is quite funny. If a team runs out of time, if they run out of their 5 minutes, it randomizes the rest of the picks and bans for them. Because some teams were going over.
Did you have
some
funny... did someone have a funny setup because of it? Did someone run out of time, actually?
We haven't had somebody run out yet, but we did the weekend before the league started, we called it Chaos Night. So we did a full randomized draft, and we did a draft where you had to pick for the enemy team. So one team picked like four logistics frigates and a vindicator or something like that. I don't know. But the normal rules still applied. We haven't seen it come into play yet, the randomizer. We haven't seen it used yet, but it should,
right.
Should provide some funny stuff.
So when I look at the thing, so the yellowish, beige colored ones, those are the bands.
Those are the bands. Greens are picks, the ones are bands.
So you start with team one bans one, or like both teams ban three, and then they pick three, and then they ban another two, and then they pick two.
Yeah. Right.
And they have 5 minutes for their whole process, kind of thing.
Yeah. So the draft period could take 10 minutes if both teams use their whole clock, but it rarely happens.
Yeah. And then after the ban thing, you've got 5 minutes. 15. For each 15 to fit up the ships. All right. 15. That's reasonable, I think.
Yeah,
I think most people can fit up a decent ship in 15 minutes. Most people have their fits ready to go anyway.
That's exactly it. That's exactly what I'm saying. That most fits, you know, a lot of these ships, like half of these ships are going to be the same fit, you know, unless you're swapping out the odd utility module.
Yeah.
You're going to have them preset ready to go. You know, unless it's only when you see weird picks come out, if someone picked a Maelstrom or an Abaddon, or just ships we hardly get, you know, ships we don't see and get picked that often, that a fit would have to be made on the fly.
Dotoxy just brought something up. What if you had a random button for your ships, and then you gain 2 points or something, right?
Oh, no. So you could randomize. Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah. So if you press, if you randomize the ship, you get, I don't know, 10% off the ship that gets picked.
Ooh. Yeah. For example, right? Maybe if you randomize and you get but that kind of sucks though. If you randomize and you get a Griffin, right? Then you save what, 1 point, if even.
Are you? You're on. You can change that to the schedule there on that screen, can't you? And that will show you the next
I just took a screenshot of it. Because if if I do a screen cap, that's like, you know, it's always gonna end up in with problems.
Fair enough.
But what about it? Like, if I go one?
Yeah, the schedule is just for tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow. Is gonna be a traveling salesman versus Valhalla Bound.
No, that's just a random draft that I picked for you. No, there's hang on. I'll send you. That's just a page where you can go and see all the upcoming matches and previous matches and the results and whatnot.
Yeah, I'll link it in Twitch chat for people to see. You might have to log in with your EVE account though. But I mean, you're just asking for the player name. Right?
Yeah, it's not. There's the only reason we track
no
it
full
is,
API.
Yeah, nothing like that. No. And
there's actually a little bit of a thing on Reddit at the moment about fraternity asking for like all kinds of infos, right? Like a lot of groups do, but then they call their API or their ESI or whatever it's called now. Mm-hmm. They call it Python. So if people leave their group after like whatever, right, and they check all their API access or ESI access, it's in there as Python. Right? So people are like, oh, no, that's correct, whatever, and then they keep on, right? Oh, they don't, yeah. It is against the thingy, actually. So, yeah, interesting. But yeah, there's no fuckery happening there, so people should check it out.
Yeah. Nah, we just do it to see who's logging in.
Yeah. Alright, and there's the schedule. Hold on one sec.
Somebody's arranging a match with me in Twitch chat. Thanks, Harvey.
All right, so we're in week 3 here. What? Yeah. So it's the Tuskless, old school, like old Tusker pilots.
What team are you looking at? Are you looking at week 3? Sorry.
Yeah, in week 3. Next match should be Tuskless versus Valhalla Bound, right?
Yeah, that's tomorrow. That's our first match tomorrow.
Yeah. And then that's like Tusker pilots, I guess.
So some people have adopted their TQ allegiance and others have kind of not, but you can kind of guess who they are based on the names and whatnot.
Yeah, I see suddenly Initiative Cutter.
Yeah,
that
big C's in there. There's a couple. There's loads of you.
Oh, there's Buddhas in there. There's an old friend of yours, huh? Yeah, there must be some inner pilots in there, I guess. Oh, Vixu, yeah.
Vixu.
Yeah, it looks like fun. So tomorrow, what did you say, 2000 or something?
I'll drop you a ping.
I'm up for it. Let's check it out properly, live, right?
Yeah, well, you can. I'll have a chat with you before, and we can get you on. You can come do some analysis.
You know what? I've never done any AT stuff or whatever. Like I'm gonna be so off with like what the meta is and stuff like this. But it should be fun for people. At least you know, at least some people might be having fun making fun of me.
We do that. We get a lot of fun throwing it, a lot of shade thrown at us. So because generally the analysts are wrong. We're generally, I think, I don't know. I'm sure one of our analysts has never got a single one right. In terms of who's gonna win, so yeah, it's a good time.
I've always watched DAT, so you know, I think I've got an idea, kind of. But yeah, let's see. We'll find out tomorrow. So tomorrow around 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's gonna be fun. All right.
Snow's not actually played in it yet at all, which has surprised me.
Very true. I should do it at some point.
You should.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know, really. Well, that's a good question. No reason in particular. Like, the format is fun. So sure, that's cool to do. And just, I guess I haven't really gotten around to do it. But I should, though. Like, it's funny stuff. Like, I did sort of smaller format tournaments in the past as well. Those usually were a lot of fun to do. So why not?
You know what? I think a lot of times for FCs and people like that, they're happy if they don't have to provide the content for a day. You know what I mean? is that maybe like, so I know it from myself, like if there's something else going on, like someone else is taking out a role, right? That's like usually what happens, but at our place, I guess. And then people are like, oh, there's a fleet going out, Panda, you want to join? Like, I don't really want to join. You know, I just want to, like, if I don't have to provide the content today, I'm happy with that. Like, you know, you guys go out and have fun. And, you know, when nothing else is happening, I can still take some stuff out. So, like, that's sometimes how I feel. Not always, but, you know, sometimes it is.
Yeah, that's true. There are always days where you're going to be more motivated than the other to do certain shit.
Yeah, we have that though, don't we? Some days I'll happily help roll or let someone else roll and just go and hunt for hours. Other days I just log in and go, ah, fuck this. You know, it's just a day-to-day thing.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you have that for like a week. Sometimes people need a break for longer. You know, it's just how it is. Yeah. And that's why you need that core group of people that's, you know, stick together, even if you're not around to hold your hands.
But yeah, I mean, like, just to give you an idea, like I think Snell could probably go AFK for a week, and I don't think our content would stop. We wouldn't stop hunting or PvPing. Not really.
No, I consider that a very healthy thing, by the way.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I just laugh because it, like, Snell could go away and nobody would care, can I? You know?
Oh no, we'd miss him. We'd be like, where have you gone? But like, it's more that we're not reliant on, you know, there's some groups, and I'm not going to name names because I've been in them, but some groups without that one or two key players, they just do not function at all. People will log in, see they're not online, and just log straight back off, and they won't do anything.
Yep. Happens. That's usually groups where those one or two people, though, they're super active too, right? They're not just like, you know, they're there every day. That's a lot of times, that's what I always say about bigger groups, like let's say Goons and so on. The smart thing they do, for example, or we do too, is like we have six like special interest groups. Because if there's that one guy, let's say I'm there 24/7 for Innet and I'm always providing content, who else is going to take out fleets then? Nobody has to. So you will have way less FCs then. But if you have like six, right? Then someone takes out a sick and deploys somewhere else. That's, you know, that's more opportunities for other FCs then suddenly. So you can have more people then, right? So over time, it's a way healthier thing for your alliance instead of just always relying on that one guy who has always been there 24/7. And then suddenly he's gone and nobody knows how the fuck this works. You know?
Yeah, people will burn out eventually. So just trying to sort of divide the workload is a great.
Yeah, I've gotten close a fair few times, I have to say. It's very real.
Yeah, it does happen. People, it's striking that balance between game and job. I think sometimes it's it can get a bit confusing which is which.
Yeah, definitely.
I especially remember after doing like tournaments with a small group of people, especially the AT, like people would always just have a long period of inactivity afterwards, like no matter what the outcome was, even if you would, you know, get some cool prizes or whatever, people would still just go AFK because they just spent such a load of time on the game in a very short period, so to speak, that they just get tired of it. I mean, makes sense to be honest.
Yeah, same with like CSM stuff, right? I mean, when do the CSM, when's the voting actually going to end? Is it going to end like today, tomorrow, Tuesday? Is that right? I don't even know.
I have no idea.
But yeah, CSM is the same thing, right? They go into the CSM and for a year they're like super involved and fucking hardcore, like nonstop, like Eve here, Eve there, Eve everywhere. And then, you know, they basically quit a lot of times. Like it happens like all the time. I think it's very similar to degree there. No, but then like so like one of the questions I actually had for you, Water or Snell, so the basic question is like what I like to ask is why did you even start FCN, right? So why do you already? It's a lot of work.
Still waiting for him to start, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in the end, I think it was similar to a lot of people. It sort of comes from a certain necessity. FCs are always sort of a rare breed in a corp. Like, you only have very few of them. So if a few go AFK or stop playing the game or whatever, then at some point someone needs to step up and start doing the ganks. If not, then, you know, there's not that much content for people, or it will get disorganized or whatnot. So I think I started sort of doing ganks in 2012, 2013 or so. I guess that's when I started sort of trying to do it. But then we still had quite a few people around that could do ganks as well. So you would get a lot of sort of backseat support, which, I mean, for me, was super comfortable to sort of get into it then. So then it's just not such a strain or not such a sort of a hassle. Like, once you know that, you know, you always have a few people that sort of got your back and, you know, correct any bad calls you might make or whatever.
Yeah, but so, like, you know, when you already start, you know already, like, it's going to be a lot of work and all that stuff, right? But, like, is there, like, a moment where you decided, what do you think, like, where you actually said, like, oh, like, that first time where you took charge, actually, took people out, and then it was, like, it all worked out, and it was great, like a big fuck yeah moment, like, was there something like that?
I mean, not really in those terms. I think it was more or less, okay, this guy goes AFK. Well, okay, we need to sort of find someone that wants to fill that spot. It's like, who wants to do it? It's like, well, fuck it. I'll give it a go and see how it turns out. Like, yeah, sure, you know, it's a bit of a hassle to do, and it's a bit more work, and, you know, you have to be pretty vocal on comms and whatnot. But I thought, well, let's just give it a go, see how it ends up. If I'm sort of comfortable with it and like it, then maybe I'll continue with it. If not, you know, at least I gave it a try and just let someone else try to do it then. But yeah, in terms of fuck yeah moments, yeah, I'm not sure. Tough question. Not so much. Not really as an FC anyway. Like, I guess fuck yeah moments, maybe winning AT12 or something like that. Like, that was pretty cool.
And someone in chat is asking, tell the story when Fisty took out a TL. What's TL? A
turn TL. Left.
A turn left gang. The first time.
Well, that's great. That's a funny one. To give you a bit of background story on that, Fisty was one of our members that... he was sort of the storytelling guy, right? I think every alliance at least has one, that there is always a cool guy that always comes up with, like, great stories to tell and sort of entertain people. Well, in our case, that was Fisty, or Fisty McBumbasher, to quote his full name. So at some point, I think he got sort of... he wanted to do a gang, and he sort of took over, and I'm not sure. He wanted to do, like, all kinds of things. Like, I remember him taking the fleet to some nullsec, and he wanted to set up drag bubbles everywhere, doing stuff that no one understood. And I'm not sure he understood it himself. But all in all, a fleet with not so much EVE content, but very good stories. So I guess it was fun in the end.
Great name, that's for sure. Fisty McBum Crusher? No, Bum. Oh, what was it? Bum Basher?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised that guy got good stories, right?
Exactly.
All right. And so for small scale, like, recently we had some really big changes. Like, what do you guys think about, like, the current bigger changes? Let's say for example, most controversial is probably the resist change. Right, what do you guys think about that kind of stuff? you have like opinions on it, or did you even notice a difference?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we had to do quite some changes to a lot of comps that we usually take out to compensate for it, at least somewhat. But overall, like, I think the small gang community can't complain about the changes that have been taking place in sort of the last 12 months, so to speak. Like, most of them have been pretty great for small gang stuff. Like, you had the Sino change, for example, which was great. Shifted the meta a lot as well, or at least from our perspective. Like, before the Sino change, you would get capital escalations like all the goddamn time. Like, people would drop you, even if you would just do like a 3-4 man gang. And sort of after the Sino changes, even if you would catch, like, I don't know, a Carrier or a Roracle or something like that, you would much rather get a subcap escalation than you would get caps. So that's sort of good. I guess the resist change, it's sort of a funny discussion. I think in some degree it hurts us a bit more than it would hurt the bigger fleets. It sort of has to do with most of the stuff that we try to do relies on high resistance, sick tanking stuff, in terms of the sort of good doctrines that we use. So where you could maybe before the resist change, you would easily be able to take on a 40-man Ferox fleet or something with 15 dudes. Yeah, once your resists drop a lot, that obviously gets a lot harder. So you need to get the sort of same amount of tank out of stuff that you used to. I mean, you have to compensate for it like somehow. So you either switch ship types or you change the ships or whatever, or drop some other stuff to be able to fit more tank. But yeah, it's been, I mean, maybe not so much controversial, because overall I think it's a decent change. But yeah, I think everyone had their own set of problems to deal with it.
Yeah, you know what, the Sino changes, that was funny, because like a couple of people really lost their minds about it, saying this is the end, you'll never see any capital escalations anymore and stuff like this. But I believe, like, for a larger scale, nothing changed from the amount of capital escalations, really, right? People had to bring their recons and people adjusted quickly. But from a small scale perspective, yeah, like, I haven't done all that much small scale in the last year, or maybe 1.5. But yeah, I can imagine, like, being dropped on way less and with a little bit more warning time if you get dropped on, right? If a recon decloaks, you know, all right, 99% chance you're about to get dropped. While before, like, any scepter that's on grid is potentially the Sino scepter, right? Which, yeah, is in hindsight. I mean,
that's one thing, but I think it's not just a Sino change. I mean, obviously the fighter changes over the time. The application got nerfed quite a bit, so sort of capitals became less and less sort of the solution to everything, which they used to be.
Which is great, yeah.
I think. I mean, yeah, it was quite an unhealthy situation. I mean, I think most people got to cope with it in the end. I mean, we had some specific fleet comms we used to use to just gank capitals as well, which is, you know, a great comp to use against caps, but not so much against subs. So I guess with all the changes, you sort of have to change up your own fleet game and that sort of thing as well, which is good. Keeps things sort of moving and kind of exciting. So that's great overall, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I miss using that comp. I don't know how much you want to go into about that comp. If that's
no, you have to detail it. No, I need to know.
No, I mean, it's fine.
We've lost enough of them to talk about it, I think.
Yeah, that too, and it what sort of it? Became. It's we used to use Leshocks in combination with Nestors, and we sort of had cap transfers on the Leshocks going to the Nestors, so you could fit your Nestors with full reps, and you didn't need any cap transfers or other stuff.
I can approve that for you if you want.
Yeah, those things just would tank just an ungodly amount of damage, and could dish out quite a lot as well. Had loads of nudes and whatnot. So that's that worked out.
There's a way, like, it's like basically remote red battleships, right? But did you ever try to use just like a tech to a howler, like hardcore tanked, and then you just base it on cap boosters? Because that makes that whole fleet a little bit more flexible, which is what we're doing with like remote rep domies ever since the 3200 cap boosters came out and the howler fleet bay, right? Or the, what do you call it? Fleet hangar? I believe that it's called fleet hangar, right? You can always grab new fresh cap boosters out of that howler, and then you can just keep going. And for example, a Nestor, you can just go full rep with two heavy cap boosters, and you can keep those running basically forever if you have enough cap boosters, right? So that would be more efficient that way. And then same for the Leshak, obviously. You can do, you know, all kinds of things just with one cap booster. You can keep it going, right?
Well, with the Leshaks, we use talismans, and Leshaks have sort of the cap transfer bonus anyway, so it already costs you a lot less cap to transfer from a Leshak to a Nestor.
But you lose a Heisler.
Obviously, yes, but like if you look at the Nestor, that has a huge repping bonus, so it's kind of a waste of a very good rep amount to put a cap transfer in place of there. Obviously, still in the mids, the Nestors would also run like a battery and a cap injector in case, you know, your comp gets muted or stuff like that.
I'm not suggesting to fit cap transfers on the Nestor. I'm just saying you could have the Nestor and the Leshaks all cap booster based completely, and then just have one holder.
Yeah, that's true, but it's on small scale. It's plus one alt is already a thing, because you rather spend that on sabers and keeping things tackled and so on, because you're quite limited in that. Also, I think with those fleets, the engagements you're gonna take are gonna take a really long time anyway. I think we had certain fights where we were on grid for at least an hour or 1.5 hours, and so on. So I think even if you would have the space to fit in a hauler, that would get emptied out at some point as well. But I guess, I think we looked at it, and at some point we came to the conclusion that we like the cap transfers better. I'm not sure about the exact reasons, I suppose. But so far it's been working out great. I don't think we had any trouble, cap issues or so on, running that stuff.
If it works, I'm just saying, like, we have been flying remote rep domies ever since they were a thing, right? Like, I don't know, they've been a thing since they were in the game, and traditionally they were always transfer based and stuff, and it was always annoying, but we switched it, and you get like 50% extra rep power out of them because you don't need the highs for the transfers, you can fit more reps and all that stuff, right? So I'm just saying, like, Maybe something for the future to test. But, yeah, I can see that you'd rather have like a transfer going and then have it reliable, and then, you know, as soon as you're running, you know you're not gonna run out of cap anytime soon. But, you know, but yeah. But if someone gets jammed, and then, you know, I like the flexibility of like the cap booster base, because if you are full, your cargo's full, and your cap is like kind of full, you can just burn off, get something tackled. You don't have to worry about cap transfer range and stuff like this. And then as soon as you're back in range, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like, gems is absolutely sort of a weakness of that comp. Like, if you bring put three Blackbirds at 100 kilometers and you could basically fuck up everything, all the transfers, and the comp will just die. But that's
the same, like, for all remote reps, though.
Yeah, sure, but that's the thing. Like, this comp was sort of specifically built just to sort of counter the capital menace and not so much dealing with subcaps that could jam or do much, like, sure, it could tank a decent sized subcap fleet, but it can't really do much to it if people are sort of competent. Like even Varroxes, they could just sit at 60 and, you know, be out of range of your Lashyaks. You're not going to be quick enough to catch up, and they can just burn away and keep plinking away at you, sort of.
Yeah, that's the real weak point of the trick ships. Which is great that they have a weak point. Imagine they would hit at 100. It would be ridiculous. I mean, you can. Yeah. I think you can push them to 80, right? Le Shucks. Like if you really try hard.
Yeah, damage is anemic there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Guys, like usually I am for like an hour and a half. We had an hour 40. It looks like. if anyone in chat has a really good question he wants to bring up, do it. Because otherwise, I would just say thanks a lot for coming on. And I would say see you guys tomorrow. And then we do the 5v5 scrim thing. And I hope the guys on stream right now, you're going to check that out too. Because I felt a little bit guilty for not checking it out, right? I like small scale stuff. I do it all the time with Corbin stuff. But then why wouldn't I check it out, right? But
you're busy. That's cool. You're busy.
All right. Then, all right. There's a question, I think.
Oh, there's so many questions.
If you had to marry an Eve ship, which ship would you pick, and why does Sadus?
If he had to marry an Eve ship, which ship would he pick?
How is it even pronounced?
Cadies. He didn't let me pick one. No, it wouldn't be the Cadies. I've got one, but it's not.
What would it be?
Jesus, what a question. It's probably the Dramiel. I've always liked the Dramiel. Don't get to use it much in Gorin because it's pretty useless compared to other options, but yeah, it'd be the Dramiel.
Start mapping those wormholes. I'm telling you.
It's
stop being lazy.
It's got a skin that's set on fire, dude.
What? Maybe you map wormholes even faster with it. How much time do you guys spend on scouting before an engagement?
Fuck all, really. Snow might have a different answer, but generally, the fights we get are very organic. We don't set up our fights in the usual way. My knowledge of where we hunt is terrible. Like, there's a lot of the guys in the corp who know who live where, what's in range, who's in range, jump bridge network. But generally, we kind of, I mean, Snow will probably back me up on this. We'll go, I can point this here. Do we want it? And there'll usually be a decision that will say no, because it's not worth it, because we know we're just going to get blobbed by 300 people. So it's normally, a lot of experience and knowledge beforehand that's like, you know, we'll know, can we take? And it's also dependent on how far away it is. Like if we tackle something like a super or a rock in the Nullsec we roll, we can take X. But if it's a couple of jumps away, we either can't take it or we don't.
And then it depends also on the time zone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Snow, do you want to add to that with something a bit more factual?
Well, to be fair, I mean, that's fairly accurate. Like, it does depend on. I mean, usually I think we scout within, like, what, 5 jump radius or something. Yeah. I mean, if it's a good region, maybe you'll go a little bit further. But most people are lazy and say, 6 jumps, whatever. I mean, that includes me, no worries.
Yeah, same. Like over 6 jumps, you're pushing it, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you look at the region. Yeah, pretty much.
One question, or like, it's not even a question. I already know the answer, right? But a local delay, right? Would you like it or what?
I don't know.
Let's say a local delay of 20 seconds. Think about that?
Nah, I mean, that would be cool. But, I mean, look at what the blackout did to the game. Everyone just stayed docked. I wonder what will happen, even if they would just implement a 20-second delay. But yeah, on itself, sure, it seems cool.
Yeah, I think the complete blackout, that there's nothing, like, that's just, it's an extreme, right? I mean, there's a way of a difference between any sort of delay and a full-on blackout. I think if you know, like even if it's half an hour, if you know after half an hour you know who's in local, that's already, you know, way different. But 20 seconds, I think, That would be
Can you imagine Reddit when CCP would try to introduce that, right?
I would say most people would like it. Everyone I've talked to said, like, yeah, 22nd, I think that's probably the best way to go. But
I think you're very optimistic.
You need to visit Reddit.
Well, Reddit. Pando. Well, I mean, Reddit is not the gold standard, really, is it?
No, it surely isn't. But, I mean,
that's one of the problems.
I'm sure. Yeah, it is. But I'm sure the community would get quite outraged about such a thing.
I don't think so. I disagree. I honestly disagree. I believe that if they would come out and say, okay, we've been learning the lessons from Blackout and we decided to implement a delay of 15, 20 seconds, I don't think everyone would lose their fucking minds about it. I'm not saying everyone, but a lot of people would probably say, like, yeah, that's reasonable. I've yet to meet someone who's like, oh, you can't do this. Like, it's not like Blackout, right? It's like, it's a different thing. But yeah, who knows? And I'm probably too optimistic to even think that's something CCP would do at this point.
There was a question. I got asked a question about what ship I would marry. The same question was posed to Snow. I'm just curious to hear the answer.
Anything that has a police skin, is that cool?
All right, any other questions? Let's see. I'm curious who Pando is speaking to. As a renter lord at the time of Blackout, it killed Vasts. That's what I'm saying, though. There's a difference between Blackout and a local delay. You know, no local and a local, there's a difference there. And yeah, I've been rental manager of Innet for a while. I have to save raw calls all day. But I'm also hunting. So I kind of know, like, what implications that would have. But yeah, some people will cry about it. That will always be the case. Like, for example, that was one problem with the last patch. There was so many broad things that everyone had something to complain about. That's why the feedback came across way more negative than it was meant, I believe, right? Because everyone focuses on the stuff they don't like. But yeah, whatever. I think local delay would be the way to go. But hey, whatever.
Something. Yeah, like, it just comes back to that free intel, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's free intel. It's the same reason they removed... you know, you used to have your watch list, didn't you? You used to add a player and see when they came online, and they took that away. It needs the same kind of treatment as that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You shouldn't get free intel.
Yep, I agree. Alrighty, guys, then. Thanks again. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Check the 5v5 scrims out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, thanks again. So,
all right.
Thanks for having us.
And yeah, everyone on stream, thanks for watching, and see you guys on the next one. Kenny, I rate, yeah, just pick someone, Render, and everyone else. See you guys.